Welcome back to Nearbound Marketing. I'm your host, Logan Lyles with Teamwork.com. I am joined today by my good friend, Dan Sanchez. He is an audience growth builder. You can find him at danchez.com. He is known by his friends as Danchez. If you're listening to this episode, you can call him Danchez as well. Dan, welcome to the show, my friend.
Dude, it's been too long since we've recorded an episode together, so I'm stoked to be here.
Yeah, man, we have been on the mic together quite a bit over the last few years, but not so much lately. And I'm excited to have you on because you and I have been jamming just kind of offline with some of the things that we've been seeing specific to LinkedIn as it relates to building an audience and continuing to get an steady engagement on social. And it ties into something I'm going to be presenting on here at the Nearbound Summit in about a month. We're going to be talking about Nearbound Social in the session that I'm leading. And frankly, I don't necessarily have all the answers. My views, my engagement, my comments have been down on LinkedIn. You've been seeing the same thing. I saw Nick Bennett from TAC post about this same thing just earlier today. So let's kick it off there. I think we're going to get into what can you do about it, but what's the situation that you and I are seeing? Let's set the stage there in case any of our audience is really finding themselves in the same place if they're trying to continue their efforts on social, especially LinkedIn, and they're seeing a difference here lately.
Man, I think there's a few things going on with LinkedIn before diving into like what I'm doing to like get more reach on LinkedIn.
Yeah, exactly.
But man, and people have been talking about little aspects of them, but I find that LinkedIn usually follows Facebook. And I got scared when they introduced the thought leadership ads because you're starting to see it play out, where the personal reach starts to become a pay-to-play kind of game. And I'm hoping it doesn't increase. It's what happened with Facebook, though. Even if you want to reach all your friends on your personal profile, well, you got to pay. You got to promote those ads. You got to boost them, right? And I'm like, oh, gosh, please don't let LinkedIn be a thing. I have to boost something in order to get reach all my audience. But it does feel like that sometimes. And I think there's just less people checking out LinkedIn right now. I don't know if you've seen, like, everyone's paying attention to all these live events are getting sold out. So I think people are just out and about more. Like people are finally like the pendulum always swings, right? COVID hit, it swung back. Nobody was at events. And now it's swung way back. And now everybody's going to events all the time, multi-events, you know?
Yeah, you've even got all the Swifties going to NFL games now, right?
I don't know about that. I guess I'm not checking out the news.
Oh, the drama lately with Taylor Swift and Travis Kelce of the Chiefs. Apparently the potential relationship there, or our buddy James was talking about it. Like, is there actually a relationship here, or are they just doing the ultimate personal brand collab where you've got a lot of Taylor Swift fans who are now like watching NFL games because she's there cheering on, you know, who might be her boyfriend, whatever the case is. So anyway, yeah, I digress, okay. But I think you make a good point there that, you know, you and I saw a lot of growth in LinkedIn, in 2020, early 2021, and the, you know, situation in the world, we have to factor into, hey, there were more people who were, you know, hanging out on LinkedIn there for a bit. People were chilling on Clubhouse before kind of the flash in the pan was over there. So those things definitely impact as much as the algorithm changes and things like that. We got to think about our audience's behavior changing, right?
Yep. So like I said, like it's kind of LinkedIn changing the algorithm against us. Maybe it's a hypothesis, but it's not uncommon for social platforms to do it. You got the macroeconomic effects of just more people spending time outside and going to events, spending less time on digital media. So that's going on. And then I just think, like you said, user behavior is changing. People are getting tired of seeing the same things on LinkedIn. And what I think they're tired of, because I'm finding myself getting tired, and I struggle to say this because I don't want to say this like this is what's going on. This is just my personal observations. I haven't even polled my audience to like validate this. But as I talk to more people about it, I'm getting a lot of nodding heads. I'm getting a, huh, yeah, that's right. And I think we're just all getting a little tired of the pontification that's happening on LinkedIn. People saying, hey, this is what you should do. Hey, here's 5 steps to this. And it's funny, I saw a LinkedIn post that kind of illustrated it best, saying like, hey, LinkedIn makes a lot more sense if you just tag the top of everybody's post with note to self. like every post you're seeing from people is literally a note they're posting for themselves, then it reads more smoothly, because that's a lot of what's going on. Note that's to self, I learned that I need to do better sales and marketing alignment. Hey, it's still not happening well. Here's what we should do about it. Note to self. Because it's really pontification. People are just saying these things as they learn them and then sharing them in their own voice. Not necessarily a bad thing. We're just getting tired of it.
Yeah. And I think that ties into some of the, you know, you are going to give some advice here, because I heard you kind of sharing, but not from a I've figured this out sort of thing, but it's very meta to talk about this. I think we're going to talk about going from telling to showing to sharing. And so we'll break down those in a second. But what you just said there reminded me of a great talk I saw. It was like an hour long talk from Alex Hormozi, who we're both big fans of. He was doing a collaboration with Think Media, who I know, you know, we both follow. They do great stuff. If you're trying to do video, you're trying to grow on YouTube, great stuff there. And he said, you know, what he tried to do early in his social media strategy was, instead of saying, this is what you should do, say, this is what I've tried and this is what I've experienced. So maybe it'll work for you too. And that note to self, it's a small change. You could follow it very much similarly in the rest of the post, could be saying very similar things, but it is received differently. And so he gave the example of, you should eat oatmeal for breakfast. And it's like, well, forget you. Like, who are you to tell me to eat oatmeal? I don't like oatmeal or whatever. Versus, hey, I ate oatmeal for breakfast for the last 30 days and here's what I noticed, right? Yeah. It feels very different. So, you know, to go back to what I mentioned earlier, instead of telling, which is a lot of the pontification, here's exactly what you should do. Start this, stop that, those sorts of things. Your first recommendation is to go to showing instead of telling. What do you mean by show, don't tell? And then we'll get into sharing, because there are some limitations with showing as well.
Right. It's the one thing I've noticed always works on LinkedIn. And this pretty much goes for any kind of content marketing out there. But if you have a solid case study and the how-to behind it, that's generally going to work well. If it's like, hey, we've been doing this for so long and we got a 200% ROI or whatever it is, like you have data, numbers, and a case study to back it up. Here's exactly how we did it. Here's how it worked. It's kind of like those are always the golden nuggets that everybody's hunting for and looking for. Remember Nick Bennett just a year ago was like, hey, I got 75 people to fill out our G2 reviews with all 5 stars or 10 stars or whatever it was.
Remember that post,
yeah,
man?
Yeah, it was a year ago. Later. It went freaking viral, right? Because it was so easy. It's like, first, we just ran an email newsletter or an email campaign to our customers and asked them to give us an MPF score. And everybody that gave us a 7 or an 8 or higher, we sent them another email and said, hey, we'll give you a $20 gift card or $50 gift card to review us on G2. Bam, 75 reviews. And I'm like, but it was such a practical one. It had evidence. We got 75 G2 reviews. It's hard. Leaving a G2 review takes like 15, 20 minutes. Not easy to do. And then they gave the step-by-step blueprint that anybody could execute. I was like, oh gosh, even a bunch of people were like, hey man, sometimes you keep these back for yourself. Don't share these with everybody, because now everybody's going to game it like you did. You just saved that one for yourself, but it's too late now. I think that was a Denardi's comment on that.
Oh yeah.
But those kinds of posts always work well. If you have something truly remarkable, the problem is, how often do we have something that remarkable to share? Not that often, even if you're crushing it and always experimenting, because we all know the path to success, the path to getting to those awesome gold nuggets is a field of failure. You got to test and fail a lot in order to get to the freaking ones that work. So what do you do in the meantime on social media? Because you can't just be like, hey, I tried this, it failed. Hey, I tried this, it failed. Hey, I tried this, it failed. That's just going to be too much.
Yeah.
And I figured, you know, like the times I've done this well are the times I was doing deep dives on B2B growth. And I wasn't pretending to know anything. I was actually doing the opposite. I was not pretending, but I was like, hey, I don't know a lot about this, but I want to know a lot more about this. And then for B2B growth, I would do these like 30-day deep dives where I was doing like 30 interviews over 30 days, reading every single book on a topic, posting about those books. And it was just an intense topic that I've developed into a bit of a framework I call my 30-30-30 plan. I might talk about later, but in that framework, I was essentially putting on my student hat and calling out, hey, I'm going to climb this mountain. This is what I'm going to learn. Come with me. And I was inviting people onto a journey to go and learn something and do something new. I started doing it recently. And guess what? It started working. People were also curious about the thing I wanted to learn, which right now I'm hot on lead magnets because our boy Alex Hormozi was saying lead magnets are the thing. I'm like, holy cow. I thought I knew a lot about him, but the way he talks about him, I clearly don't know enough. So now I'm doing a deep dive on lead magnets and I'm finding them all and doing a series of interviews on them. There's not a lot of books written about it, so I'll probably buy the 3-4 books written about it and read those and learn everything I can about it and document their journey along the way. And then maybe at the end, I'll have something worth showing. And then maybe in 6 months from now, after I run some campaigns based on what I learned, I'll have something cool to show. I'll have a case study of like, this is what I did with some lead magnets. So that's kind of my plan now.
Yeah. So going from telling, which would be kind of the equivalent of the pontification that we're all kind of tired of, which I think we pointed out some reasons why there. I think one other reason worth calling out is something we've been talking about on this show is that at the beginning of the inbound era, at the beginning of the marketing automation era, what fueled everything? Data. Data that we didn't have before. We had people's email addresses either through lead magnets or through, you know, data tools, those sorts of things. Now, all of a sudden we had data on what people were doing and we got intent data and this and that, right? Well, we've kind of reached infopocalypse where we have so much data, we have so much info, and our buyers have so much info. And what's really fueling things now is trust, because they can find out how to do anything in any number of ways. They can hop on LinkedIn and there's no shortage of people saying, this is how you should do it. What they're asking is, who can I actually trust? Right? Which is why the going from telling to showing, I think, is also so powerful, because it's tapping into, there's a level of trust when you can say, I'm going to name names. I'm going to drop numbers. I'm going to tell you what we did. I'm going to tell you what we accomplished. I mean, we've seen it recently. People have been filling mine and Bo Brooks at teamwork.com, our LinkedIn DMs, as we did a case study with HubSpot. When our sales team moved on to HubSpot a year ago, we were willing to do a case study. And guess what? HubSpot has been blowing that up, has been sharing that everywhere. People have been leaning forward because there were numbers to share on our sales team's productivity, right? The other area I see this is like what Databox has been doing. Pete Caputo is episode number one on this show and talked about, you know, collaborating with your audience. And they've been really leaning hard into these benchmark groups. And they actually have numbers to share of here's these type of companies and what they're seeing, good, bad, or indifferent, but it's actual, it's something that they can actually show. But to your point, you don't always have those things to show. And that's where it leads into, you know, the third option, which is really sharing the journey. I like what you called out there, is that if you're sharing the journey and you're going on that journey, then it will actually lead you to more things to show and address the problem of not having anything in that second option. So, you know, you're active on LinkedIn, as we know from this conversation. You've got a weekly podcast you do on the podcast channels and YouTube called The Attention Podcast. And you've got a weekly newsletter that you do. So between those three channels, what does sharing the journey specifically look like? What are some of the tweaks to going from telling to showing to then sharing? If folks are listening to this and they either have a podcast or they're active on LinkedIn or they have a newsletter, like what are some of the tweaks that they can make to go to this model or this path of sharing the journey in some of those different channels?
You know, it's funny. Often, like I'm still consulting a lot on podcasting because I've known for that. So usually this is regards to podcasting and people are like, oh, I can't start doing that because we're already doing this type of thing on the podcast. And I'm like, great. Well, start doing this on top of that. Keep doing that. Sure. Keep posting on Fridays that episode you've already been doing. And then just start a new episode that's probably like 3 minutes long being like, hey, we're going to do something new and we're going to go on a deep dive onto this topic. We're going to be posting about it about this many times over the next month, 2 months, whatever it is. And you can just introduce people to it and bam, start doing it. Call it a series and maybe you do it again, maybe you don't. But that's the way I would do it. You can even inject it along the way. It's like just start doing solo episodes about your learnings as you're going through and trying to figure something out. So you can just start injecting it into what you're already currently posting as extra more content. And if you find that that's the content that's doing better, then do more of that and less of the other stuff that you're currently doing. So I would just start injecting it in. I'm not doing it with my newsletters. My premise for my newsletter is mainly a React channel. So I'm usually reacting to somebody else's stuff and it's less personal. So I get more personal on LinkedIn. I get more personal on my podcast. And that's currently where I'm keeping it.
I love it, man. And I think that there's, you know, as much as people were like, oh, if I see another poll, I feel like a year ago, people were complaining about polls on LinkedIn. But, you know, I've actually found that very kind of short posts with a quick question or a poll are a great way to lean into this sharing the journey approach on LinkedIn, even though, you know, I think what people were sick of is people just posting polls because they got more reach, or, hey, what's your favorite breakfast cereal on Sunday or that sort of stuff.
That's
so, what do you think are some of the formats that people could keep in mind for, this process of going from telling to showing to sharing, especially on LinkedIn, since that's kind of where we started the conversation? What has kind of prompted you and I to rethink our strategy there?
Yeah. Formats, you said. Do you mean post formats or like ways to structure your post?
Either one. I mean, any advice you've got for folks on like, on, you know, things where you are seeing, like, what's causing you to generate more comments, engagements, the head nods, those sorts of things. Is it just the question? Is it question followed up with, here's kind of what I'm thinking? Is it a poll? Is it, you know, 1, 2, 3 step that you can kind of follow? Anything there, man?
I think all of those, all the formats work. But I generally like to kick it off with like a hey and a wavy hand of like, I don't know much about X and I need help trying to figure this out. Generally, because LinkedIn's such a good natured platform, people want to help. And if you can ask a question that lots of people know the answer to, those posts generally do well. Like I remember maybe 3 years ago or so, I was like, hey guys, I actually don't know what demand gen means. I hear some people saying it's this. I hear some people saying it's that. What the heck is it? And you know what? That post, so many people are like, you know, I've wondered the same freaking thing. So I'd say the one thing to keep in mind is to be transparent and don't be afraid to look like you don't know it all. You know, you don't need to look like you know it all in order to ask really good questions. At the end, if you're curious and you lean into it and put a student hat on and just learn out loud, you will probably attract more people. So what type of format of what you should post and how you should post it. It could be a poll. It could be a post asking a question. It could be sharing a little lesson you learned along the way and what you still have left to figure out. Those things I think will fall into place if you are leaning into curiosity, genuinely, like you're trying to figure it out and you're trying to learn from your audience that you do have. If you're genuinely trying to learn, you will ask the right questions. You will post the right polls. You will post the right things as you share the journey along the way.
Yeah, exactly. And I think the mindset shift there is, okay, I think I need to talk about this thing for my audience. So I'm going to go try and find out the answers. I'm going to go learn, but I'm not going to document any of that. I'm not going to record it, right? I'm just going to try and have these conversations offline, which you're having, right? This podcast episode is an example of that. You and I have been texting and talking and I'm like, well, hey, we should actually record this and share the journey of what we're talking about. So have, you know, keep that in mind. What conversations are you having with your peers, with your customers? What questions are you trying to answer and turn that into content? You know, you touched on the 30-30-30 plan that you've referenced before, and you talked about your time where we were both a host on a daily podcast from Sweetfish B2B Growth, and you executed that plan. For folks who aren't familiar with that, give us kind of the quick 1 minute rundown of what the 30-30-30 plan is, how it ties into this, and maybe how you would do it differently now based on, like you said, things change, things evolve. You might do it differently than when you were doing those deep dives, you know, a year or two ago.
Yep. I don't know if I'd change too much. The 30-30, the number is just a nice, easy recommendation, but the numbers obviously change. But let me tell you what it is. I developed it as a pathway for thought leadership. If you're already a professional in this space, maybe you're a professional account-based marketing manager right now. That's what you do for your job, and you want to be known for ABM. Well, I would recommend the 30-30-30 plan. If you want to go from just being a professional, like you're already doing it, to being a thought leader in this space and actually leading the thinking of people on this topic, the 30-30-30 plan is my ultimate recommendation. This is the plan. Read all the books on that topic, 30 books. It's actually ABM probably only has six or like 15 or 17 books. So if it's more than 30 books, then you need to niche down farther. Maybe do like ABM according to sales or something like that. Like niche down farther until it's below 30 at least. It can be less. So read all the books on the topic. That way you kind of explored everything there is to know, or at least published on a topic, all the most important things. And honestly, that sounds really intimidating to read 30 books, especially if you don't read more than like one or two books a year. I promise reading 15 or 20 books on a topic feels more like reading four or five books, because those books, especially if they're on the same topic, all repeat themselves because they have to cover the same contextual information, usually have the same ish frameworks. So once you've read two, now you're just looking for new data, new pages you haven't of information you haven't read for. It goes fast. It goes way faster. You're pretty much skimming for the new information each book has, and each one has less and less as you get through them. So that's first step one, 30 books. Step two is 30 interviews, because not everything's published in books. Go to the ones who are the experts, who are the thought leaders in the space, and start a free podcast and go interview them. Not only do you create good content and you're getting associated with these people, but you're building relationships with them and you're learning from them. If you've read all the books, or you're part most of the way through reading those books, your questions are going to be more informed. You can start going deeper because you're like, well, everybody's talking about this, but nobody actually defines it. How do you define it? And then you can actually go in way deeper, because now you're talking to the experts and diving in past the basic questions. They'll start to assume you're an expert just because of the level of questions you're asking based on all the books you've read. If you don't believe me, try it. Like, I've done this multiple times now, even on ABM, and people just assume I know a lot just because I read all the books. Well, I'm still learning. I always keep that hat. I'm like, I'm just a student. But people just through you get associated with these experts, you build relationships with them. It starts to play into your nearbound marketing stuff later as you build relationships with all these people. And then lastly, write 30 blog posts about the topic, specifically for SEO, because SEO, if you do the keyword research, are the most asked questions related to a specific topic. What is account-based marketing? Account-based marketing tactics, account-based marketing strategies, account-based marketing teams. How do you structure an account-based marketing campaign? These are all the most basic questions that are being asked on Google. If you try to write a blog post that ranks number one on Google, you'll have mastered, because you're teaching it now, the most fundamental things when it comes to the topic. And of course, it doesn't have to be 30. It doesn't have to be 30 interviews. I just threw out a rough number to kind of like shoot for around here. Could be 100 interviews and 15 books and 20 blog posts, but you know, mix and match yourself. But if you go through this plan, chances are, and you're documenting it along the way, like on the place like LinkedIn, you're kind of like, hey, I read this book. This is what I learned. Hey, I interviewed this person. This is what I learned. Hey, I just published this blog post of my best findings. You're going to be known for that thing. And you're going to be a thought leader, even if it's just, you know, a lowercase, you know, lowercase thought leader, and you're just influencing a few people. You're going to be influencing people by the end of that. So that's the 30-30-30 plan.
I love that, man. And I want to come back to something you mentioned there and how it ties into your nearbound marketing and activating those external evangelists that you can start marketing with instead of just trying to market to your audience, a big theme of this show. But I just want to chime in there and say, you know, in 2018, I went from historically being planted on the sales side to then selling for a B2B podcast agency at Sweetfish and selling to marketers. And I started being referred to as a marketer because I was hosting a daily show, B2B Growth, we've talked about here, where I was interviewing VPs of marketing, CMOs, directors of demand gen. And just by association, I wasn't necessarily trying to reach a huge audience. The audience of that show was already established. So I didn't really care about, you know, what's going to be the right episode, and we got to plan this out, and I was just showing up as a student. And guess what? It allowed me to interview people who knew more than me. I learned, I started being associated there, and it actually did help with growing the audience more so than kind of our typical editorial calendar approach. So I think that there's something to that from my own experience there as well. And obviously your and mine overlaps there a good bit. Talk to me a little bit more about how that 30-30-30 plan and this process of going from telling that everybody's doing to showing to sharing the journey, which helps you show some more. Like in that share and show, where do you think folks are maybe missing the boat, where there's an opportunity to activate what we've been talking about on the show, those nearbound evangelists, those folks that are already have more trust and influence with the folks that you're trying to reach? What are some of the tactical things you think about there as it relates to this shift in your social strategy and your audience growth strategy?
There's kind of multiple things going on with it. As you interview them, as you start to learn from them, one, again, we already hit on, like, you're building relationships with them. If they like you, the chance that they're going to help you when you need help with something, even if it's small, like commenting on your post to get some more reach, is higher, right? Like if I reached out to somebody that I just interviewed yesterday and be like, hey, can you give this post some love? They're going to say yes. I mean, I literally just got a post like that from somebody I didn't know. Been like, hey, it's kind of a random request, but can you comment on this? I was like, don't know you. I'm not even going to read the post. Could be a good post. Don't care. But if you have a relationship, you can, it's a give and take kind of a thing. You start to be, as you spend more time with them and your face shows up next to their face as you post, because you just interviewed them, right? You start to be more associated with them, especially if you're doing it with them and all their buddies and everybody else in the space. You start to elevate your own brand, your podcast brand or your media brand or your personal brand within the space starts to become recognized. And ultimately you start to get in front of their audience, because as you interact more with their content and they're interacting more with your content, especially on a place like LinkedIn, well, that just means their audience, as they interact with your content, is now seeing your stuff and their comment on your post. It's almost like an endorsement. Anytime you comment on a post, like if you have a post that you hate and you hate the message of, don't comment on it. Because it's almost like an endorsement, even if you're saying, I hate this, you know, because it's going to go out to all your fans and then they're going to see your face attached to it, even if they don't read it. So that's kind of what's happening, though, in a good way. If you're building relationships with all these people, is organically on LinkedIn, the way it works is your posts are going to start getting in front of all their followers, unless they're like so famous on LinkedIn, like Justin Welsh, that it doesn't matter how many times you interact with his posts. He's got hundreds of people interacting with every single post. It doesn't matter. But for the most part, if you go on after like micro influencers or even some macro influencers, this is still going to work out relatively well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, we've talked about Alex Hormozi, who has a huge audience. One thing he doesn't do on LinkedIn is ever respond to comments. So you can go in there if let's say, you know, his audience overlaps with yours, and go and answer some of the questions that are happening in the comments. I'm a big fan of getting active in the comments and thinking about those people that you're interviewing, those influencers and evangelists that you're activating, that you're learning from as you go, as you make this shift in your social strategy to grow an audience by sharing the journey, not just showing and telling, and definitely not just telling. But I've had people recommend this book to me. I'll give it a shout out. It's called Super Connector: Stop Networking and Start Building Business Relationships That Matter. I actually haven't read this book, but I've heard people mention it when they talk about like my commenting strategy on LinkedIn, because I will tag a lot of people in comments on other people's posts throughout the day, and not in a mass spammy sort of tagging way, but yeah, like if I think you can add value to this, if I think someone else can jump in or would have 2 cents to share, I'm doing that. The other thing, I think this is super in the weeds, but I think this plays into this strategy, something that you've done and other people like Tim Davidson, who's been on the show, have called this out. You actually record Loom videos and drop those not in posts, but in comments sometimes. Like, give us an example of that, and where that's worked well, because I think some other marketers could actually learn from that.
I wish more people would do this, but for some reason, Tim Davidson is really the only one who's like actively pioneered this as a thing that he does. He does it regularly now, and it works well for both of us. It's so easy to record Loom videos that I don't understand why more people don't do it. I use it for everything. It started with just the typical, like, oh, I'm saving meeting time and just sending people back answers because an email response isn't going to suffice. I'm going to show them rather than just tell them in an email. But I found that it also worked remarkably well for LinkedIn. And every time someone had a question that it just took me too long to type, and I'm honestly like, I'm decent at writing like short form content, but some explanations I'm just like, I'm just going to record a video. It takes less time. The funny part was, is I did it to save time, but it blew people's minds. people would be like, oh my gosh, thank you so much for a video. Now here, it's a little bit different because I have a video studio. If you're listening to this and not watching this, you can tell when you see my video, like, oh, Dan spent some time building a freaking studio in his office. Got it. That helps. And I've also spent a lot of time talking on video, so I could, I guess, speak more smoothly. But even if you have good answers and just record it in your bedroom because that's where you're doing your remote work, Loom just hits harder because you can give a personal response, even if it's only for an audience of one. And sometimes people like it so much they start tagging all their friends in, and then multiple people watch your Loom video. But it's my favorite way to take passive followers and turn them into friends. You could call them engaged fans, but I'd rather just call them friends because I think that's just more appropriate for LinkedIn. People go from, oh, I've heard of you, to, oh, I know Dan Sanchez because they've watched me, and usually multiple times, if because I'm doing this all the time in DMs and comments. By the time we actually meet in Zoom, they're like, oh, yeah, I've been watching your videos for a long time, one-on-one.
Yeah. Absolutely. And I think I've talked about this before. I don't know exactly the mechanism behind the scenes, but I don't think it's a surprise to anyone. As you are at LinkedIn, more than any platform I've ever seen, I've heard Alex Sheridan talk about this. It's like an ongoing in-person conference that's just going 24/7. And it is built more like networking at a conference than it is kind of a stage and then an audience like some other social media platforms, because if you're DMing with someone, it is much more likely that your post is going to show up in their feed. Oh, and yeah. To your point, if you're already building relationship in the DMs, they see your post, they're probably going to support it just organically, even if you don't ask them, but you do have more capability to ask them because of that trust and the relationship established. To your point earlier, if you've been on a call with them, if you're exchanging emails with them, because most of us use the sign up with Google to tie our Gmail, even if it's a business G Suite account, to our LinkedIn. I have seen it where I just hop off a call with someone. We've not been in LinkedIn DMs. We're just emailing, or they've been on my Google Calendar. They show up in my feed, or they show up as liking my next post. I don't think that that's happenstance. I think that there's the connection there, without getting too deep into the technical, because I don't know, but it has happened enough to where it really seems to make sense to me. So I would just say, the more that you lean into the relationship building, the more that the audience growth is actually still going to happen. And if it's video, then it just accelerates that trust, that familiarity so much more. So I'm rambling for a bit. Any thoughts on that?
I'm like, oh man, that's a stretch. I mean, the companies are all listening and doing stuff like that, but I'm like, I don't think Google's passing data to Microsoft for LinkedIn, but something's happening. I don't know.
It's happened so much to me, man. Not to sound super conspiratorial, there's conspiracy theories enough out there today without us adding to them on the Nearbound Marketing Podcast. But hey, the point is, if you want people to engage, you need to engage. You need to start those conversations. You need to be in the DMs, and you need to be in the comments. And video is a great way to make your comments turn an audience of one into an audience of more, right?
Yep. So much of audience growth in the very beginning is like, this is the wrong metaphor, but I'm going to use it anyways, hand-to-hand combat, you know? Mm-hmm. Of course, you're not punching them, you're loving them, you know, you're trying to help them and give them a hand, but it's very much a one-to-one thing. Once you've gone one-to-one, you can go one-to-few, and then eventually graduate to one-to-many. But even then, you try never to get away from the one-to-one and helping people. So one of the best ways to do that is just through sending people Loom videos, because you can build more relationship that way.
Yeah. And I like you mentioned this, I think, on your Attention podcast with the other Nick Bennett that we know at Harness and Hone, not Nick Bennett at TAC, but you were saying your network is kind of like your pre-audience in a way, right? Yeah. As you grow your network, they're going to be the folks that can kind of be that kindling to light the fire of an audience that grows more rapidly and it becomes more exponential. Well, man, I think we could record for another hour and a half and it would still be great, but I think there is a good spot to round it out. So going from telling, to showing, to sharing might not work for you, but at least it's something that Dan and I are experimenting with. Dan's done a good job of showing some examples of where that has worked for him. So if people want to stay connected with you, Dan, what's the best way for them to stay engaged with you, follow your content and see what you're sharing on the journey as you, continue on this path to kind of shift your approach to your own audience growth?
I mean, LinkedIn.com is probably the best way. So LinkedIn.com/IN/digital marketing Dan, back when everybody was calling themselves digital marketers. And now it's permanently that.
Easy enough, man. Well, we'll put it there. You can find him at danchez.com. Look him up. His newsletter is fantastic. Highly recommend subscribing to that if you enjoyed this conversation. Dan, this was fantastic, man. Hopefully we made some new friends sharing the journey today. Thank you for being my friend and joining me on the show today, man.
Absolutely.